Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, dedicated to supporting teachers for over 130 years, with master's degree and licensure options online and regionally. Viterbo.edu/graduate.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences. Itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Welcome to the Midday for Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland here in our Buck studio once again with another dazzling young musical talent, this time Bobby Levenger, who was one of the Final Forte finalists and a pianist of some capabilities, which we will find out today both via some of the recordings he's made and then also via a live performance here in our studio. And welcome to the Midday, Bobby.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
You have come from La Crosse, so we appreciate particularly, you know, the travel time involved. I will ask you off the top kind of a question that comes up occasionally for maybe eventually for all performers, and that is you have to deal with an injury, and how did it come about, and how did you cope with it?
Well, I recently had an injury to my right hand, and originally I was going to be on this show earlier, but I injured my hand, and I went to the doctor and I sprained my wrist. You know, that was their diagnosis. So, you know, the only thing you can really do is, you know, rest it and, you know, take really care at making sure that it heals. So I did that, and luckily it healed in about a week or so. So thankfully, and I'm here today.
So was this an injury that would impair your overall dexterity, or was it just like hitting heavy cords, or what was the real problem?
It was kind of an injury where I wasn't sure if it was going to hurt when I played or anything, but, you know, if you have any type of injury and, you know, you're doing something that could be hurting it further, then right. That's really something you don't want to... You don't want to deal with.
There's that famous story of Robert Schumann, you know, of course, a great composer, but mm-hmm. he also wanted to be known as a great pianist and had considerable talent in that direction. But I gather he thought that his span wasn't big enough, so mm-hmm. he wanted to do some things to stretch that and maybe improve the dexterity of his ring finger, and so he put his hands in some kind of invention.
Machine,
that was, but it in fact wrecked his hands.
That's a pretty notable story.
There are all kinds of stories about, I think, not so much wrecking them these days as how people come back from those mm-hmm. from those injuries. So I'm glad that yours was a brief one.
Me too.
You have pianists in your family?
No, I do not. Both my parents, you know, took lessons, but they weren't serious. I have perfect pitch. My dad is perfect pitch, so he plays chords and things and has a good ear, but and my mom sings as well. But other than that, there's really not a lot of music in my family. So
perfect pitch. Now, I've heard that described as a blessing and a curse.
I don't know. I kind of, people think that, oh, you hear a random note, you hear the telephone ringing. Oh, that's a B flat. That I don't really think like that. It's just kind of, you know, something, a tool to use when you need it, I guess.
But if that piano is just a shade out, doesn't that kind of drive you a little crazy, whether you're playing or somebody else?
Well, it's a little annoying, but, you know, you get used to it now over the years, 11 years of playing, so.
So what's the advantage of perfect pitch, do you think?
Well, I guess, you know, if you need to replicate a pitch, you know, for a vocalist or something, it's helpful then. Or if you just want to, you know the key of a piece, or even like how a piece modulates in certain ways or something like that. It's interesting to be able to tell what the difference is of that.
Do you have any sense of what percent of musicians have perfect pitch?
I have no idea. I heard a long time ago that it was 1 in 10,000, but I really don't think that's true because I've met so many people that have it, and I don't think it's that small of a fraction.
For some reason, the number 5% comes to mind, but that might be high. So
it could be. I don't know. There are plenty of theories about that out there.
One of the things you're going to play during the midday today is this Beethoven piano sonata, which actually has a nickname, and in this case, the nickname I don't think it was deliberately assigned by Beethoven, but it's one that's fitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the nickname for this sonata is the Les Adieux Sonata, French. And little background about this sonata, it was 1809 in Europe. And if you know your European history really well, you'll know that the French and Napoleon Bonaparte were leading an attack on Vienna, where Beethoven was. And the Archduke Rudolf, who was one of Beethoven's good friends and good patrons as well, I might say, he was forced to leave from the attack. So Beethoven wrote the sonata and dedicated to the Archduke Rudolf. And each movement has a subtitle about what the Archduke was doing. And for example, the first movement is the Das Lebewohl. And these are the titles that Beethoven gave. Das Lebewohl is the farewell movement. And the second movement is the Das Abwesenheit. This is the absence. And then the third movement is Das Wiedersehen, which is the return, the Archduke.
And the particular thing about this sonata, though, you see this occasionally in pieces where, Bliss's Overture Edinburgh, actually the opening notes reflect the name Edinburgh, mm-hmm. the rhythm of the opening. And that's true of this piece too, isn't it?
Yeah, the first movement, he actually wrote Lebewohl over the first three notes. And it's really interesting that the first three notes really define the whole first movement, just three notes. It's really amazing how he takes this simple motive and translates it to so many other things.
So here it is, your recent recording of the first movement of Beethoven's Opus 81A, the Les Adieux, or Lebewohl Sonata. Just the first movement, for starters. We're going to be hearing the rest shortly, though, of the Les Bavol or Les Adieux, the piano sonata number 26 by Beethoven. And the pianist at hand here in our studio, Bobby Levenger, final forte pianist and a pianist of many other accomplishments as well. And we'll hear a little bit about some of the upcoming ones shortly, as well as plenty more piano music, too. All of that after this, here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now back to this sonata, Les Adieux, which gets its nickname from that motif, that three-note motif that we heard at the very beginning and kind of reverberates through the first movement. But you mentioned that, Bobby, the other two movements also have these titles, but they're not, I gather, based on the actual rhythm of the opening phrase.
No, the sonata is, as I mentioned, it's dedicated to Archduke Rudolf and based off of Archduke Rudolf's leave in Vienna because of Napoleon's attack. And the second movement has a subscript, Abwesenheit, which is the absence of the Archduke. The third movement is Das Wiedersehen, which is the return of the Archduke. And now something else about these two movements. Usually classical sonatas, they have clean breaks between movements, you know, so the audience knows when something is starting and something else is starting. But this is kind of late Beethoven getting into later sonatas. He puts no break between the two movements. He has a continuous flow and you don't really know exactly where the third movement is starting, but he makes it very clear in this case with a huge B-flat 7 chord that leads us back in to this joyous third movement.
And interesting, you pointed out earlier when we weren't on the air that he does something very similar with the Emperor Concerto that he wrote at the same time. Going into that last movement, you really don't get much more than a very brief transition.
Right, yeah, the Emperor Concerto was written around the same time, and that similarly was dedicated to Archduke Rudolf. It's also the same key. So I think there's no doubt that there's really some correlation between those two works, the Fifth Piano Concerto and this sonata.
Well, I have to say that opening movement, given that it was a farewell, sounded pervasively quite cheerful, some of the most cheerful Beethoven you would hear, which is a little surprising, but it's going to be interesting to hear how the second and third play. I'm expecting a cheerful finale, but for this second movement, the absence will... We'll see what Beethoven serves up. And again, this is was recorded probably back around January by you. So the finale, the last two movements of Les Adieux, the piano sonata number 26 by Beethoven.
Thank you.
the Razzle Dazzle finale, actually the last two movements of Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 26, Les Adieux, as played by my guest during the midday today, Bobby Levenger, who hails from La Crosse but is already traveling all over the place as a young musician and has a lot more of that in his future, I predict. And now we have really just a minute or two. There's so much music packed in here this hour. We have just a minute or two for you, Bobby, to set up this Liszt piece for us.
This next piece is entitled Liszt's Funerai. It's from a set of pieces Liszt wrote called Harmonies Poétiques et Religieuses. Quite a mouthful there. But anyway, this piece, it was published in October 1849. Now, the last piece had a story behind it. This one does as well. October 1849, if you know your European history, that was not only the year, but also the month that Frédéric Chopin died. And it's kind of debated today whether or not Liszt actually wrote this piece for him. The more likely case is that Liszt wrote it for three of his friends that died in the Hungarian Revolution that occurred around that time. So this piece is very somber. It has a funeral march, very, very expressive and sad funeral march. And then it has a more hopeful and onward-looking theme that comes from that. And the middle section, this is another tie-in to Chopin. The middle section is very, the left hand has this very very detached and very march-like things going on the left hand, and then it goes to octaves. And Chopin, if you know any of Chopin's works, his famous Polonaise in A flat major, he does this in his middle section. So who knows if Liszt actually, you know, was writing this sort of as in remembrance of Chopin or for other motives.
But here it is, Les Funérailles by Liszt, the pianist Bobby Levenger.
Thank you.
Le Funeral by Franz Liszt, played by Bobby Levenger. Quite a bit in there, including what sounded very much like a tribute to Chopin. Back with Bobby Levenger, and we need to get pretty much straight into Ondine, but in a few seconds, who is Ondine?
This piece is from a set of pieces by Maurice Ravel entitled Gaspard de la Nuit, and the three pieces, Ondine, Le Jabet, and Scarbo. Today we'll hear Ondine. But Ondine is a water nymph, and all three of these pieces are based off of three poems written by a French man named Bertrand. And this piece is, the poem itself is very, contains a lot of imagery and is very provoking of, you know, this water nymph trying to convince this man to wed her. And become kingdom of the lakes, as the poem says, but in the end he refuses. And as in the end of the piece, you can hear her tears and then her laughter is these huge arpeggios across the keyboard.
Here we are, live now from our Buck Studio, Ondine by Maurice Ravel. Bobby Levenger is the pianist.
Thank you.
Undine, and what nationality provided the composers who could best describe water and music, I think you'd have to give it hands down to the French there. That was the work of Maurice Ravel and Bobby Levenger. Thank you for joining me today for the midday.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.